This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Am I tough enough?
Strong and stable leadership.
Total rhubarb.
Hell yes, I'm tough enough.
Shut the fridge.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show podcast.
Love podcast, hate nonsense. It's the Politics Show podcast. Ladies and gentlemen. Tried to do a slightly different intonation there. Did that work?
Which bit was different?
The high point of, I think it went podcast.
Oh.
The emphasis.
You know, that's been a really big thing about the Taylor tour, is she's been changing certain...
Oh,
yeah.
When in her performances?
Certain notes she's been changing.
Ooh, is that intentional?
Yeah. It's just
or
like,
is it just
well
lack of preparation?
If we're going to get into it...
and we are.
Yeah, and you asked for it. after she broke up with Joe Allman, she changed... I can't remember. It's one of the folklore songs. She changed a lyric in it, which went from it being like a very loving, doting lyric to like a, oh yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, you again.
Yeah.
Doing that annoying thing that I used to love.
Yeah.
Ava Santino, I've realised we haven't introduced ourselves.
Oh yeah, that's, yeah.
We sometimes forget that people haven't watched this before.
What, someone new is tuning in?
Yeah, well, you'd like to think so. If you're, we should grow exponentially. You're Ava Santino, I'm Ed Campbell.
Question.
Answer.
What day do you go to Glastonbury?
The Wednesday, I think.
You are? I was just debating whether to go the Wednesday or the Thursday.
Probably the Wednesday.
Mm.
Why? To do this?
To do this?
Yeah.
No, I just thought of it then and I thought, why ask you off? I haven't seen you this morning. I was going to ask you.
We were in Bristol on Saturday.
We were in Bristol.
We were speaking at the Student Publication Association.
Yeah.
Awards.
Or we were learning about the law.
Oh, God, we learned
media
an awful
law.
You were talking on Westminster, I was talking on digital media. It was really good fun.
Yeah?
Met lots of interesting students.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. But we also went out for dinner afterwards. And I'm going to embarrass my friend, who probably won't listen to this. But I have a friend who lives in Bristol who came out for dinner with Ava and I and a few others. And I was going to say his name. Joe really, really, he was like, he asked me if I wanted a beer. And fly down a waiter, picked up the drinks menu, read from the drinks menu, went, can I have two local drafts? And the waiter went, that's the heading.
You're such an arsehole, that waiter.
One of your friends observed that the waiter could have handled that.
Oh, were we calling him my friend?
We can call him whatever you like.
No, it's cool. I'll let him know.
He was never mentioned you before.
Yeah.
Your friend. Made the point that he could have handled that a lot better and not embarrassed Joe in front of a lot of new people.
Yeah. But a table of, yeah, quite a few people he didn't know, actually.
Mm-hmm. He only knew me.
Yeah.
Before that evening. And now everyone at that table is going
to
tell that story.
Do you know what's funny is that Ed didn't want to come to the dinner. I'd said that they came for a drink with us. And then I was like, oh, we're all going for dinner here. And Ed was like, no, no worries. We've got reservations. And his friend was like, oh, no, we'll come to dinner with you. Ed was like, true. Ugh.
That's sick. Anyway, away from our time in Bristol. Mm. Back to you. We're talking about your morning again.
Oh, it's always my morning. Always. Why don't we start with your morning?
Because that's coming up later in the rundown.
Sorry about that, yeah.
Sticking strictly to the rundown, you were once again with the Mayor of London.
Yes, he's on the campaign trail because the mayoral elections are around the corner. And he was talking this morning about eradicating homelessness by 2030. So he's pledged £10 million of the City Hall budget to eradicate homelessness. So it's a huge, huge amount of money from that budget. Mm. Those budgets aren't that liquid.
No.
So it's a huge amount of money to pledge. And it's not contingent on a Labour government, which other policies of his are.
That's interesting.
This is pure him.
It's pure Sadiq.
Yeah, it's the same thing that the free school meals are going to come out of.
Interesting.
Same budget. And he was talking about Susan Hall and the campaign that she's been running. We spoke afterwards because over the weekend, just before the weekend, Susan Hall had been at hustings where she said that there's no such thing as a free school meal. Someone has to pay for it. Well done, Susan.
You have the awareness of Andrew Carnegie.
Yeah. And she was also saying that Sadiq Khan is feeding the children of millionaires with his free school meal programme. And do you know, what strikes me as fascinating about Conservatives, they saw what happened the last time with Marcus Rashford when the Conservatives tried to, like, ridicule the idea of free school meals. They just keep trying that same card. They're like, it's going to work this time.
They're just so innately averse to it. They can't reckon with the circumstances changing.
Yeah. It's like, you know, they keep saying exactly the same thing each time, which is, who cares about the hungry school children? And one day they think it's going to be like, everyone's going to go, yeah, who does care?
It's also as well being like, putting it in that framing like, oh my gosh, the few, however many millionaires there are in London, the thousands of children who benefit from this that might not necessarily, they might not be the ones it's directed towards. Mm. But because it's such a broad net, the children who it really, really helps, who aren't getting anything at home, it's probably one square meal they'll have a day, they will get to eat.
Yeah.
Which, net positive?
Net positive. One thing, okay, look, I'm really sorry, I'm going to be London-centric for a minute, okay, but this is the city where the mayor is being elected, all right, so just let me talk about this.
We'll talk about fucking North Tyneside at some point.
Yeah, we will. We'll get to it. It's on the list. London has some of the wealthiest people living next to the poorest children. Mm. I mean, when we're talking about poor children, I mean like children who have absolutely nothing. One child in every single London classroom is homeless at the moment.
Jesus.
That doesn't mean living on the street. That means that you don't you're in temporary accommodation, or you don't have a permanent address. You might be sofa surfing at a family member's, whatever. The poverty levels in London are extraordinary, and they get masked by this this idea that the capital is so wealthy and everyone's, you know, got such a fantastic transport system that no one else needs to do anything apart from ride the tube all day, and it's only £2.40.
You can live on the tube.
You can live on the tube. And then one of the most unhelpful things as well is when we talk about the price of people's houses and call them millionaires off the back of that. Like, it's a line that you've probably heard when we talk about Jeremy Corbyn. I'm not going to be talking specifically about him here, but they always say, well, his house is worth over £1 million. And it's like, yeah, because it's...
Everyone's house is worth over £1 million.
So that's like, you could say to any one of us sitting in this room who rent, you could say, well, they live in a £1 million flat. And you're like, well, that is true, actually. Yeah, I do. But... That doesn't mean that I have £1 million.
Never occurred to me before.
Mm. And it's a really clever tactic and a masking tactic to make everyone seem extraordinarily wealthy here, when the reality is they're not.
London liberals living in multi-million pound flats
with
no living rooms or gardens.
Yeah, but it, yeah.
Yeah. On that point about Susan Hall's point about this will feed millionaires as well, quite a lot of, when people talk about the NHS as well, actually, they talk about reform, they say, oh, people above a certain income threshold should pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with tactics, and I think they might apply the same argument to something like free school meals for everyone, the real issue with that is if you have rich people benefiting from this, rich people who are time rich as well, if they benefit from the same free good or service as literally everyone else, they are very good proponents for it, because they might not work. They might be literally just be the leisure class, and they might have the time to facilitate, like, to improve things for everyone. But say you're a single mother with three jobs, you may not even speak English. You're not going to necessarily be the best advocate for that good. So if you take out people who have, like, the time to advocate for other people, it's just the whole system kind of decays.
Right. Sadiq was talking about something similar to that today. He was saying, when Susan Hall is saying that I'm feeding the children of millionaires with the free school meals program, she invalidates the argument that any millionaire, quote unquote, should receive the state pension or should have access to the NHS or should be allowed to have their over 60s bus pass because, you know, their freedom pass. Because, well, okay, if you can pay for it, then you should. And so the entire welfare state falls apart.
Yeah, prisons
start
as well.
Applying that. Can you imagine if we probably will get to this place actually in Britain where there is a threshold for which you don't qualify anymore for any state benefits.
As in an income threshold?
Yeah.
I could
imagine we would probably get somewhere like that. Eventually.
Hopefully not.
No, I mean, hopefully not.
Fingers bloody crossed.
Because there was a push for it for some time, because I can really see quite a clear argument for, like, the winter fuel allowance, why you shouldn't receive it if you've got money in the bank. Mm. But, yeah, the whole universal...
Universal.
Where do you set the cut? Where do you set the cut off?
Yeah.
Like, someone who's earning 30 grand in London is probably on the breadline.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to, you know, if they're the earner of the household.
Yep.
Compared to anywhere else in the country, do you start setting? Where do you set the threshold?
Yeah, well, it should be a London waiting for things like that.
Do you know what one thing that really fucks me off about London waiting? It's all of those slags that don't live in London anymore. So they don't have to pay the London fee, like, you know, the London premium to live here, because it's extortionate to live here. They live, like, in the home counties, or some of them even live further out. Like, a lot of people live in, like, Leicester now, or, you know, but they work from home, so they still get the London waiting.
So you're annoyed at them?
I think you should have to have a London postcode or prove that you're commuting multiple times a week in order to qualify for the London waiting in your salary.
But why did that only impacts employers?
Yeah, I know, but it still pisses me off. No, because it happens in the public sector too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If you're commuting in, I think it's fair game because you're having to pay that premium to commute here. And people in the comments who know nothing will go, it's so cheap to travel around London. It's not cheap to travel into London, actually. It's very expensive.
Yes. So you object to people having more money?
I object to people working in the public sector, working from home and not living in
it's
London.
Jacob, we spoke here. Jacob! So good to see you.
Yeah. Because I think those jobs should go to people who want to live in the city and contribute to the ecosystem here.
Civil service isn't just London.
Wasn't talking just about the civil service.
Sorry, public sector then.
Yeah, that might be people who work for the councils.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get them.
Yeah. Tell you what, in this country,
yeah.
Public sector fat cats are too good.
Yeah.
They've been siphoning off the cream of my council tax, driving around in their Saabs. Living in Wokingham, probably.
Can I just say that's the funniest thing you've ever done? Because I honestly had a conversation yesterday with a civil servant who was talking about buying a
very reliable car.
Yeah.
Very reliable. Don't read them. Before you become more right-wing, shall we move on?
What's next on the agenda? Cashless society.
Oh, don't get me started. Magna Carta. Oh, before we get on to this next thing, I want to tease the next episode of Extreme Britain.
Oh.
I was in...
Here he goes.
Workington on Thursday, Wednesday into Thursday, in Cumbria, which is the whitest place in Britain. And I don't actually remember how we got onto this with this gentleman, but we talked about... He talked about when Northern Rock crashed, he had shares in Northern Rock, and he wrote to the House of Lords and cited the Magna Carta demanding his money back.
Did it work?
He was like, and not one of them replied. Oh.
In fact, I wrote a few good few years ago about Northern Rock Bank. I had shares in it. I wrote to six peers claiming it was stolen under the grounds of the Magna Carta and Bill of Rights. And it states in that bill, no freeborn man shall be seized, detained, in prison, goods taken away from or maligned without being tried by his peers or law of the land. No freeborn man shall be delayed or denied justice, which has happened with Northern Rock.
I also don't believe him.
You don't believe him?
I don't believe him because I don't think the Magna Carta chat wasn't around then.
No, I think, but he wasn't being like a...
No, I think he's lied to you.
I don't think he did. I'll tell you why. Because he wasn't like... It wasn't in the same tone as those people, like anti-lockdown people. It was like he was citing like specific... I'm going to make up what they said in the Magna Carta. If you're interested, it's widely available online. But the Magna Carta...
The Magna Carta is widely available online.
And probably in Tower of London or wherever it's kept. If you want to look at the primary source...
It's kept in Surrey, isn't it?
I just don't know. I'm not a Carter head.
Windsor? Is it kept in near Windsor? Runnymede?
Somebody tell me.
Tell me where the fucking Magna Carta is?
He said there was something in it where like the provisions of the justified earnings of free Englishmen should not be taken from him or something like that. And I think he just doesn't understand free market capitalism.
I know, but
investing money.
You know, I think you've now taken the Jacob Rees-Mogg hat because I would say that what happened with Northern Rock was appalling. You know, people lost everything overnight and the government chose not to bail it out. You know, certain banks they did bail out and other banks they didn't. And, you know, like this guy, like, was, you know, when he's talking about having shares in Northern Rock, he probably had enough to, like, you know, live on or live comfortably with, right?
Yeah.
Not talking about the people at the top who really did have the cream.
No, true.
This guy just had...
Driving Saabs.
Yeah. He's not driving a Saab.
No. Well,
anymore.
I just sell a Saab.
Northern Rock. Where's the Magna Carta law?
There's two in the British Library, one in
Salisbury
and one in Lincoln.
Okay, so, you know, all of those places I said?
No.
None of them.
I don't know if the micro would have picked
Can we have a second research point? Is there the table where they sign the Magna Carta? Is that near Windsor?
That's presumably just in a castle.
I feel like I've seen a statue of, like, some chairs.
Do you mean King Arthur and the Round Table?
Runnymede! Oh. Yeah. For we used to be governed by the Magna Carta.
For the Cashless Society. Susan Holland, Cashless Society.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Biggest news over the weekend, World War III.
Yes.
Not quite. Not quite?
But there was a concern there.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time since the 90s, Iran launched an attack on Israel, and it was in response to an Israeli strike on the Iranian consulate in Damascus, where there were a few key people in there. But so this story is really interesting because Israel have not claimed the attack. They say it's an accident,
mm-hmm.
Or it wasn't them. I can't remember what the excuse was. And there was quite a moment actually on Radio 4 this morning where Nick Robinson got really quite irate about it. And he was saying to David Cameron, the Foreign Secretary, like, it's so obvious that it is them. Why are you, the Foreign Secretary, on here taking the line?
Yeah.
That, you know, the Israelis are putting forward, the Israeli government is putting forward. It's like, come on.
Mm-hmm. We know you're not stupid.
And then he was really caught out at the end of this interview because Nick Robinson said to him, okay, well, so, you know, you're talking about how this is a proportional response and, you know, this is Israel has a right to defend herself. How would Britain react if, oh, no, that was it. Iran had gone a bit out of pocket by reacting in the way that it had after its consulate had been hit. And he's like, well, how would you react if the UK's consulate somewhere got hit? Mm-hmm. And David's like, well, we'd show them. And it's like, okay.
We saw what they did when British people were killed by the IDF.
Yeah.
So we know the answer is that, well, maybe he's being honest and, well, not being honest, but the answer is probably not much.
What?
As in, I think he's being like...
No. If the British consulate got hit, I think that would be a really big deal.
I'm being glib.
Are you being glib?
I was being glib. I apologise.
About the Iranian-Israeli conflict.
Yes.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Because someone has to be.
Absolutely. That's why they come here.
But yeah, so this is... okay, so this is also thrown into... Not that they were ever going to do this, or at least not in like the next couple of days, but this is thrown into the air whether the export licences that are being granted to Israel are going to be curtailed or suspended, because David Cameron was explaining this morning that now if they halt those export licences to Israel, it would look as if the UK is siding with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it wouldn't though,
no.
Would it? Because what, and then, you know, they go on about this line about, well, it's only 0.2% of, you know, arms that Israel have being supplied by the UK. And it's like, okay, but the argument that they're so minimal surely carries that actually also makes sense to go, well, we'll just take it away then.
Yeah.
If it's so inconsequential, why do you keep it there? Oh, you keep it there because it's symbolic.
Yep, symbolic of your friendship with Israel. People love David Cameron now. I say people in Westminster journalism seem to think that David Cameron's the man.
I sent you I was joking when I called him a statesman five times this morning.
God, you're so sensitive. I wasn't talking about you. You've just outed yourself as being one of those people.
No, I called him statesman like to you five times in a row this morning.
As a joke. It was a joke. I actually wasn't talking about you. But people talk about, oh, wow, David Cameron's such an amazing foreign secretary because he can, like, pull up his trousers and talking to a video camera.
He was fully clothed.
He wasn't on a beach as Afghanistan falls.
Yeah, but to be fair to Dominic Raab in this incident, it's not really beach time, is it?
It's actually not true. He might want, like, if this was happening in July, there's every chance he would be on the beach.
Mm. So Cameron this morning as well was talking about aid trucks. So what he's been pushing for is aid getting into Gaza. And he wants that to be 500 trucks a day going in. And he congratulated Israel and, Egypt, you know, that crossing, for allowing 400 trucks in. Now, listen, I did do that math some earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying like I'm a professor of maths.
No.
400 is not 500. That's 100 missing trucks. So that's 700 missing trucks a week.
Mm-hmm.
There is a famine. Apparently, the famine is about to happen in Gaza. Famine already in Gaza. Surely, you should be pushing harder. It's not even a matter of, we would like you to open the gates for a little bit longer. It's like, let the aid trucks in. Just do it.
Yep.
Or we will withdraw the export licenses and you'll look terrible on the world stage. Shall I do diplomacy? It seems really simple to me.
I think, actually, this should be an audition reel for the ambassador to Israel.
I am going to work on the Rafah crossing and I'm going to claim the London waiting. And that'll show
and
you all.
And you'll be angry about it. You'll be fucking furious about that.
Mm.
It's interesting as well, in that interview with Nick Robinson this morning, David Cameron was asked, consistently asked about weapons, and he talks about aid as if people are stupid. I think that's what, I think this kind of illustrates where the government is behind public opinion, perhaps, on this, is that I think, well, if Nick Robinson is having a go at you about, or the BBC in general, are having a go at you about supplying Israel with arms, then the tide has turned. And if you're on the back foot talking about that and you're defending, it's like, oh, it's only 0.2% and we still do aid, you've really lost public mood.
Well, because none of the opinions made sense. None of the explanations that Cameron was giving earlier made sense. I mean, should we put that clip in here of where he talks about proportional attacks?
Mm-hmm. Responses.
Yeah. Proportional responses. Sorry. Let's play it here.
Now, the former ambassador to Iran, our former ambassador, said this is not our quarrel and pointed out, as almost everybody did, that Israel attacked sovereign Iranian territory, albeit a diplomatic mission in another country, in Syria. You can't dispute that, can you?
Well, I can certainly dispute that Iran has is a malign influence, and a malign influence that we feel, not least here in this country, where Iran tried to kill dual British and Iranian citizens who work for Iran TV.
Sure, but Israel Iran is a diplomatic territory, didn't it?
Well, let me just come on to that. But also, Iran's funding of the Houthis has been attacking international ships, including British ships in the Red Sea.
Did Iran hit diplomatic territory? Well, Israel, I'm so sorry.
Clearly, Israel, they haven't attributed to themselves to this, but, you know, they you have to understand from their perspective, the IRGC are arranging Hamas's attacks on Israel and all the rest of it. But I would just point to
the... Well, no, you give Israel the benefit of the doubt on this, when it's pretty clear to everybody that Israel attacked Iranian sovereign territory, and you would surely say they've got a right of self-defence, as Israel itself has.
Yes, but I think when you look at the response, 110 ballistic missiles, 36 cruise missiles, 185 drones, a direct attack from Iran into Israel, I think that is of a different order. And that's why I think it was right to take the decisions that we did, and indeed right for the Americans to take the decisions they did. And what happened actually avoided avoided an escalation in the way that I suggested.
So you see here how it's proportional. It's not proportional for Iran to act in the way it did, mm-hmm. to send over 300... you know, well, mixture of drones and ballistic missiles and all that. And then the quiet bit here is that it is proportional for Israel to do that mm-hmm. to Gaza. So Sunak is going to give a statement this afternoon in the chamber. Mm-hmm. Parliament returned today. Then you'll be able to find that probably right next to this video because it will be neatly clipped up.
Yes, expertly clipped up. But remember to watch this in full. Because retention is important.
Yeah.
So watch that next.
That's right, boys.
Shut the fridge.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Liz Truss is back.
She's back, baby.
Greatest Prime Minister we never got to see live out? She's still alive. Sorry, carry out her missions. Yep.
You killed her like she killed the dream.
Killed the dream.
Of home ownership.
Killed the dream of the IEA. Yeah, she's back promoting her book, 10 Years to Save the West, and has been talking to everybody. She's been talking to John Ian Dale.
She's not talking to us, though, is she?
No. Have we asked?
Have we asked? Yeah.
We're about to bid for an interview with Liz Truss. Liz, we would love to have you in.
But Liz, look. Liz, you're the bastion of free speech. Mm-hmm. You believe in a free press. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you're even going to be later on this year, you're going to be on a few American stages talking about how free speech has been limited in the UK. What better way to prove that you mean that by coming on Politics Joe?
But we can censor you in real time.
Also, someone might actually watch this.
So, in her explosive chat with Ian Dale tonight from 7 p.m, also plugging LBC, I'm in plug mode. I don't need to be. So she says it has to be Donald Trump to win the White House. I don't think Biden has been particularly supportive to the UK. I'd like to see a new president. Calls for the Bank of England governor, Andrew Bailey, to be sacked.
To be sacked.
There should be proper investigation into what happened in September 2022, the actions of the Bank of England took.
Someone needs to figure out what happened here.
Tell you what, I've been ruminating on this for 18 months and I have still haven't the foggiest fucking clue about what happened.
I love when they just start shouting about printing money.
Yes. She repeatedly refuses to rule out running for the leadership again.
She's so back, baby.
She's so back. I think that's an interesting... She was the most popular candidate the last election. That's why she won.
Yeah.
Like, that's how elections work, listeners. But do you think
she was? She took a while to get up there, though. Do you remember? Was she a late nomination, or she was trailing behind? She wasn't. I think it wasn't until like the last couple of rounds that that she stood a chance.
The hustings, I think, was like the
yeah
when she came when she.
She wasn't getting enough MPs to back her. I think in the beginning she wasn't. Oh, I know why. And there was another figure, and I forget who it was.
Penny Morden?
It might have been Penny. I think it might have been... Who else ran for the leadership?
Sajid Javid.
Yeah, one of them scooped up quite a lot. So the way that a Conservative leadership election works is that you have to be nominated by MPs, and you do several rounds of that. And then those MPs basically pick their MP, like they pick their horse, and then they can switch horses at the next stage. And what had happened was a lot of them had gone already to a candidate, and so Liz was trailing behind. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of it, She'd hoovered them up.
It's interesting. Her kind of wing of the Conservative Party, within Conservative circles, I don't think beyond that, actually, but her ideas are very popular. Like, at the Popular Conservatism Conference, it was widely attended kind of across the Conservative Party.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the free market gang there.
Well, she doesn't... Does she really want... Yeah. I think also, though, you've got, like, the moment is that a lot of the Conservatives are very upset at the lack of conservatism that is being... that is occurring.
Yes.
You know, you've got a Prime Minister who's hell-bent on a nanny state and a very large state. We've got a huge state.
Huge tax burden.
You know, if you're, it's almost the way that people would approach a protest vote. They're sort of going, okay, well, here's someone who's offering the total opposite to that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that they necessarily want that. Do you know, like, when you're in a by-election and you're voting and then Labour win a Conservative seat, it's a protest vote.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be sure that that seat will stay Labour at the general election. Mm-hmm. It might just be a moment for constituents to kick them. And say, stop this. Mm-hmm. This is our protest vote.
It'd be very curious.
Sorry, that's what they're doing with Liz Truss.
Yes.
So they're appealing to, they're going over and being like, oh, Liz Truss has got some smart ideas here to try and kick Sunak into gear.
But it's also quite funny being like, well, she's done them. We've seen her ideas in action and the economy has never recovered. But I'm willing to give it another chance. So Sunak will bring back hanging.
Yeah. If Sunak brought back hanging, do you think he'd win the election?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
No, I actually don't think that.
Oh yeah, me neither.
I think people would be like, he'd be more popular. But I don't think he'd win. What would be? Oh, there'd be some really good like right wing newspapers like headlines when Starmer opposes hanging people.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, friend of the murderer, Starmer. Yeah. They kind of do that already, actually.
Yeah. What's new? Did you write that Express headline?
So I'm just reading off the Express website.
Yeah.
Terrorist hugger.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I'm reading out loud again. yeah. Do you remember the Jimmy Savile stuff?
Yeah. It was insane. Just accusing him of what? Being his friend.
Of letting Jimmy Savile go.
Yes. God. People should.
But to be fair, Starmer did turn up to the prison and open the prison door and said, Jimmy, please.
He was never in prison.
You might be more comfortable here in this children's hospital.
Jimmy Savile was never in prison.
Okay.
That's my only issue with that statement.
So, just to be clear, Starmer also never. Right, okay.
We might have to revise that one.
No. There'll be no more cuts.
No more cuts? This is going out live. Turn it live! she also says, there's too much activism in the civil service. The state has become more left-wing and there are too many quangos. Is it quangos or quangos?
Quangos.
Quangos, what a stupid word. Making the life of a prime minister difficult.
She's not wrong.
She's not wrong?
She's not wrong.
Jacob.
Because let's give you an example. The Home Office.
Woke.
The civil servants who are being told to get the papers ready to deport people to Rwanda. And they're saying, we would like to see the legal advice on it, right? We'd like to see legal advice on this. Quangos.
Woke.
There is also, I think there was a group of, I'm not sure what department this was in, a group of civil servants who wanted to see the advice that had been given to Number 10 about whether Israel was breaking international law, because they were dealing, they were the civil servants who were in charge of the arms export licenses, and they wanted to see that because if you're, if they are breaking international law, then it is illegal for the, us to be exporting arms to them. Quangos.
Quangos.
Yeah.
Bloody woke lefties gone absolutely.
Bloody woke lefties.
What do you think? What's her deal? What's her aim with all of this, do you think? If you were Liz, why would you be doing this?
I don't know, but she also, she set out in the book that she never had sex with Kwasi Kwarteng, which was a rumour that was allegedly...
She said that? Is that what she said? Why did she do that? Is that true? Why?
I read that in the Mirror earlier, though. Maybe we have to fact check.
Can we get a live fact check on that?
Yeah, Laura, please may you check that.
I see. I'm going to look
no,
it up.
I'm pretty sure that's true, because I said this morning when I did the paper review, I said that I don't know why on earth she would release a book that would make her seem less interesting.
Let's try this. Quite the quartet.
Laura's fact checking.
Okay.
It means that you can keep engaging with me.
Sorry, I've been so thrown by that.
I think it was so, like page six of the Mirror.
So, Mrs. Truss, it's a pleasure, pleasure to sit down with you. I didn't do it!
She thinks she's...
I did not have sex with that man.
She thinks she is. She's trying to make Kwasi Kwarteng Monica Lewinsky.
She's like hidden a dress away.
She starts wearing a blue dress everywhere.
Hey. That's
do you remember when I told you that Beyonce lyric and you thought it was disgusting?
Remind me of it.
He Monica Lewinsky'd all on my gown. He did not Kwasi Kwarteng.
Kwasi Kwarteng didn't Monica Lewinsky.
I nearly did a joke there that the was trust. As shit as the joke that was in my bathroom. The bathroom, the hotel bathroom. They had a piece of art. I'm doing air quotes if you're listening to this, and it said "strong and stable, my ass." And I got really upset by it. Just,
like, who's that for?
I think they thought it was, you know, it's like funny, edgy.
Just good, clean fun.
Good, clean fun. And I thought, wow, that makes me want to
do something worse than what you're probably doing.
Do Windrush.
Oh my God.
Well, because it's a Theresa May. Right. Theresa May was a strong and stable.
Strong stable.
Laura, did we get a definitive answer on that?
I haven't found it.
I mean.
Let's see, hang on. Just quickly check so we know. Truss clarified that any rumours suggesting a closer than colleague relationship with Kwarteng were unfounded.
Told you.
Sick.
Yeah.
Excellent. But after you finish watching this, I suddenly realise her interview with Ian Dale is happening at the same time.
Yeah, I know. I thought that earlier.
On YouTube. So don't... I hope we've not fucking clicked off, you cowards.
Yeah.
We know you like us more than Dale. Do you like us more than Dale?
Do I like us more than... No, I don't.
No, you're very... You love cross-question.
So where are we? All the regulators, she said, have had mission creep. The civil service have become less accountable. Would it not be the civil service has, rather than have? I'm not checking your writing. I'm just saying that Liz Truss's diction is not very good, is it?
No, it's not.
Terrible syntax there, Liz.
Dreadful.
Wasn't she education secretary at one point?
Probably.
She was. Yes, she was, because there's that really awful interview of her where she's asked to do, like, 9 times 8, and she gets, like, cross-eyed.
What's 9 times 18?
162?
That sounds right to me. Congratulations, you're now education secretary.
Is that wrong?
No, I think that's right.
No, hers was 9 times 8, so I don't know why you went harder.
Because I assumed you'd have known, you'd have thought about 9 times 8.
It is, yeah.
Great maths.
I think I went cross-eyed when I did that.
You were silent for about 15 minutes. We didn't edit that out.
I've got, like, loads of counters. I'm trying to do that trick with the nines.
You're doing, like, Goodwill Hunting. Like,
yeah.
just off, just over there, is a, there's a whiteboard that Ava's been like glaring at for about 6 months, to be honest.
Not another one.
It's the Politics Show cast.
Local journalism.
A fatwa on local journalism.
There has been a fatwa issued on local journalism by big tech companies, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And who better to investigate that than Nish Kumar and Josh Widdicombe in their new Sky show, Hold the Front Page, where they go and act as journalists for local papers across the UK and in Benidorm. So they were in the studio this morning and I had a chat with them about it.
I have a deep and profound respect for the skill of journalism. I have family members and friends that work as journalists. And so for me, I think it is a very, very specific and incredibly important skill. Obviously, we're working quite a different section of the media because there isn't a huge focus on opinion pieces in it. It's about actual on-the-ground reportage. And so I always felt like I always have and had a tremendous respect for journalists and journalism. I think that, you know, I think unfortunately the country is kind of in the grip of the opinion and editorial section of a small group of incredibly right-wing newspapers, and they have set the agenda in the British political landscape for as long as I can remember. You know, successful Labour election victories have been won with the support of Rupert Murdoch's papers. I think that there's a huge difference between the opinion section and the actual news sections of newspapers, apart from the Daily Mail, which can just the Daily Mail and the Sun, which can broadly go fuck themselves.
Broadly,
yeah. The Mail and the Sun just both. I don't think you need the word broadly. Themselves. Yeah.
Our caveat won't help you there. Josh, you famously used to be a journalist.
We before this discussed that we both studied at the same postgrad place.
Like round the corner from here, right?
Yeah, the corner from here, yeah.
Right. I'm not sure I should give away the Joe location.
Here in Nottingham.
I'll be tweeting the postcode.
But how has the have you noticed a change in the industry? Since you've gone back, I
studied, my postgrad was called magazine journalism, which you said still exists, but I was surprised at that. When I did my postgrad thing, it wasn't, and it was like, it touched on the internet, but there was an implication it probably wouldn't take off.
That's in the early 2000s.
2006. No, but it was like, so you don't need to know.
They were still on the fence about the internet.
No, I'm being. It was more like you don't need any specialists, you know. But now I imagine
SEO.
I imagine that stuff. And then I worked at the Guardian on the internet side of it, really. Mm-hmm. By which I mean I put other people's work onto the internet and called that journalism.
You did some minute by minute.
I did some minute by minutes. I did one Formula One minute by minute that's still there, and I read it recently, and it is. I didn't cover up the fact I know nothing about Formula One as well as I thought. There's a bit where it says there's bits of cars all over the track. Anyway,
could be bad.
Make of that what you will, rightly or wrongly.
Incredibly, we were bad at journalism. Yeah. And I know that's going to be hard to believe, given that one of us has a journalism qualification and has just revealed he used the phrase bits of cars all over the track on coverage of Formula One.
At the time, The Guardian was going through a real, it was trying to adapt. I was there when I was only freelance, but I was there when the internet and papers kind of got enmeshed, and it was quite fun because it was like a kind of a play you'd have about the new and the old coming together. Do you know what I mean? Like there was grizzled old sub editors who couldn't understand why you'd want the headline not to be a cheeky pun, but instead contain every word that someone like Google. And so at that time, and the Guardian wasn't going through a good financial time. I perish the thought. And so it kind of, it didn't feel at the time like journalism was buoyant. Mm-hmm. It felt like maybe it was the start of like, and no one really knew where it was going. I think now everyone kind of knows where it's going. And it's, I think all these local papers are just, they've realised that the way they have to adapt is to be the go-to place to go for local news online.
Yeah.
Like, this is Plymouth, which I go on regularly, because they have Plymouth Argyle. They're the best source of Plymouth Argyle news. That is going to get far more money than printing it in the local paper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose it's just the same, you know, for every... It's just moving across, really, isn't
yeah.
it?
Mm. I suppose also that speaks to the... You see on different... it's like Reach websites. They have like the aggregate like Wrexham news.
Yeah.
Even though they're the Birmingham thing. Like that's.
Yeah.
I suppose the flip side of that is not local news will also be like what happened in EastEnders last night will also provide quite a large source of income.
Well, this is the problem with internet, and you do you find yourself doing it yourself. You'll go, what time is? Oh, I don't know. Is Liverpool v Chelsea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you'll Google it, and you'll come up with Birmingham Live will have written an article. Yeah, yeah. That will have those exact terms, and they've done it so that I'll click through and fine. But that's not the eternal thirst for hits, you know,
yeah.
is not conducive to brilliant journalism all the time,
yeah.
I'd say.
But I suppose the double flip side is it's required to keep the lights on.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not like judging it.
Like, no,
yeah.
no, I know, yeah. I'm agreeing with you. It's like a snake eating its tail. It's just the...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think also, like, in terms of... us as consumers of media, we may need to reacquaint ourselves with the idea that you have to pay for things.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you want papers to stay alive, you have to buy your local newspaper. And if you want national newspapers to stay alive, you have to, you know, pay for subscriptions to, you know, you have to pay for subscription models, especially because like the advertising is changing and it's a complicated time in the media mm-hmm. landscape. But it is important that independent news sources continue to survive because otherwise the only news we'll all receive is the news that Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, mm-hmm. and, you know, two other people who run tech companies feel that it's fit for us to have access to.
Or Joe Lycett as well. He gets
Joe Lycett, weirdly, is as powerful as all of that.
Well, look at the name of this bloody show.
Another sneaky prank.
Another
sneaky prank from Cheeky Little Lycett.
Yeah, he's going to come in here.
Do you know what? That, like, in terms of those stories are going to get the most hits nationally that a local paper can get.
Yeah.
If you, because we'll always cover them, you know, and you do it on, you do it if you're on Have I Got News For You, or you do it on Last Leg, that part three will do a funny story because there's only so much. And so... Actually, I imagine if you've got a guy that looks like, who's found, you know, a picture of Jesus in a slice of toast, the Kleiner Classic.
Yeah.
That's going to go massive in the age of Twitter and Instagram and the other ones.
The other ones that you're so aversive.
The other ones that I'm all over.
Bebo.
Friends reunited. Yeah. It's going to be massive. It's going to be massive. Nish, you were host of the MASH Report, and all your comedy is very political, etc. And similar to John Oliver, etc. They talk. John's talked about kind of views himself as a reporter,
and that is where the similarities end.
I don't think that's very comparable. Very
all the comparable. Same people hate both of them, and I include myself within that.
That's
Some of Whittaker's tweets on his puppet account.
My egg.
At John Oliver and at Nish Kumar. Go F yourself.
Yeah. You really wound me up today at work.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What's wrong with loving your country? Why do you hate our way of life?
Because I've been to Benidorm.
What do you think... What do you see a kind of a comedian's role is in like parsing the news?
I mean, I think if you do comedy about the news, you have an intrinsically parasitic relationship with it because John is genuinely slightly different because they work with actual journalists within their team and they work to generate their own stories. That's one of the things that makes that show so unique and special. For most of the rest of us, we have a sort of parasitic relationship with it, right? Where the journalists generate news stories and then we try and write a joke off the back of it. And I mean, the only higher purpose I can see is that it's literally just making news stories palatable so that people engage with it. That's the only kind of like high purpose I can see to doing jokes about the news. It's just like hoping that people get interested enough in what you've talked about that they go and read the actual article that you've taken the information from.
When I was a kid, my parents would watch Have I Got News For You? And I think I should have been up, but I was. And I knew a lot. A lot of my knowledge of like the news from the 90s comes from because I was up when my parents were watching Have I Got News For You. I was never going to read The Guardian at the age of 11.
No.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I wasn't going to pick that up when my parents were reading that. Or they had Private Eye, but that looked so boring beyond the so cover.
Dense, isn't it?
Yeah, you're like, that's not for me. That's not 442 magazine. But I'd watch Have I Got News For You because it was funny.
Yeah.
And I probably know quite, I was aware of stuff a lot more because of that. And yeah, it's a really good, I'd say that's a kind of case in point of what Nish is saying.
Yeah, that certainly was the John Stewart effect, I think, for lots of people of a certain age in the States. It was, it's an entry point, but it's not an end of itself.
It's like you'd, it's a bit like you'd read interviews with bands that you'd like, and that the things they mention would be entry points to stuff you're interested in.
Yeah.
And I think comedians is the same thing.
But it's no more than that, you know? I think, like, I think sometimes when people write about comedy about the news having an effect beyond just making people interested enough to engage in it, that makes me slightly queasy.
Just be aware, Nish has taken it to Brexit, to Trump, to the Tories, and none of them have any impact.
Yeah. It all goes back to that. It all goes back to the Peter Cook thing about the cabaret circuit in the 30s having a devastating impact on the Nazis. You can talk about the fact that it's has some positive impacts, but at the end of the day, you're just a fucking band on the Titanic. Like that's all you are, really.
How was that?
Sick. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That full interview will be out imminently.
Imminently?
Imminently. Tomorrow, I think, is more likely.
Tomorrow?
That's not quite imminent.
You lazy boy.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Thanks, Ava, for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
As per usual, we will be... Remember to like and subscribe to The Politics Show wherever you get this podcast, and to leave a review if you fancy.
Mm.
Would you like them to leave a review?
If you'd like to.
We encourage it. Thanks for listening, everybody.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.